Hello, this is Howard Bochner, Editor-in-Chief of JAMA. I'm delighted to introduce JAMA Internal Medicine, the new name for Archives of Internal Medicine. I am so excited about the name change for this journal. It becomes a member of the JAMA Network and the 10 grouped and associated journals. Welcome to the brave new world of the JAMA Network.
This is an author interview from the JAMA Network. This is Jan Engmeyer with JAMA Internal Medicine. This may not be a question you've always pondered, but it's an important one. Do the members of your state's Medicaid Drug Selection Committee have conflicts of interest? And if they do, could you find out how those are managed? What policies are in place in different states? Dr. Lisa Barrow from the Department of Clinical Pharmacy and Institute for Health Policy Studies at the University of California, San Francisco, is the corresponding author on a study that sought the answers to those questions. Welcome, Dr. Barrow.
Hi, thank you.
Let's start with how you defined a conflict of interest for this study.
Well, we start with the assumption that decisions about what goes on Medicaid preferred drug list, or basically the formulary of drugs that's covered for Medicaid patients, should be based on the best available evidence and free of conflicts of interest. So we define a conflict of interest according to the definition used in a recent Institute of Medicine report on this topic, and that says that a conflict of interest or a COI exists when an individual's professional judgment or an institute's primary mission is unduly influenced by a secondary interest, such as financial or personal gain. So a COI specific to our study might be when a member of a Medicaid drug selection committee, the committee that decides which drugs should be on the Medicaid preferred drug list, has a consulting agreement or accepts other financial support from a pharmaceutical company whose product is being considered for the formulary. We know from a study of hospital formularies that formulary committee members who have more interaction with drug companies are more likely to request that drugs made by that company be added to the formulary. And this results in newer and more costly medicines being added to the formulary. So we decided to do this study because we found in a previous one that there was great variability in the medicines on the preferred drug list among states, suggesting that states that were not using uniform processes for establishing their preferred drug list. So for this paper, we wanted to examine the part of the process related to managing conflicts of interest on the committees.
So that was the objective of the study?
Well, the objective was to describe the content of the Medicaid Drug Selection Committee policies for the U.S. states and the District of Columbia, and then to categorize the policies by strength. And we did this by counting different components related to what was disclosed, how the conflicts were managed, and how the policies were implemented. And then we also wanted to identify the characteristics of a strong policy.
So how did you go about finding the answers to the study questions? Can you describe the methodology for us, please?
Sure. Since Medicaid programs are public programs, we did a systematic search of Medicaid websites for any policy documents related to conflicts of interest on Medicaid drug selection committees. Then if we could not obtain that information on the web, we emailed and or telephoned the listed contacts for each committee. So we had to do that for 34 states. And to do that, we obtained contact information for the Medicaid Pharmacy Services or the Medicaid or Department of Health Services more generally. So in the end, we obtained policy documents from 27 of the 40 Medicaid programs that have PDLs. Three states actually do not have PDLs because they're all managed care. And we obtained these policy documents, 14 from websites, and 13 from contacting committee members. We think it really should have been easier to obtain these policies. We then systematically coded all of the policy documents using predefined criteria for how the disclosures were done, how they were managed, and how the policies were implemented and enforced.
What are the main findings of the study?
Well, first, we found high variability in the conflict of interest policies, a lack of public availability of the policies, and inconsistent enforcement and management of conflicts of interest among the states. So the most common management strategy was disclosure of conflicts of interest in about 70% of the policies, followed by self-recusal in about half the policies. So self-recusal means that in some states, committee members with conflicts of interest were not allowed to participate in discussions and or voting about whether a drug could be added to the formulary. And only about 15% of the policies banned any relationships with industry. So, for example, one state said that if a committee member had a current affiliation with a business or company that manufactured prescription drugs that were being considered, they could not participate on the committee at all. But that was pretty rare. And the process for reviewing the disclosed conflicts of interest were unclear for many states, although about a third of them did have someone assigned to review the conflicts, but that was typically the committee chair. So most policies did not mention any enforcement procedures, although one state said that if you were found not to comply with the policies, you could no longer serve on the committee.
What do you think are the implications of the study results for clinicians and also for patients?
Well, as healthcare reform is implemented and the number of Medicaid patients is expected to grow, Medicaid patients and their physicians who treat them must be assured that the medicines available to them are based on evidence of efficacy and safety and have not been influenced by the conflicts of interest of committee members who select the medicines. So our findings suggest that many states do not have adequate protection against the influence of conflicts of interest on the Medicaid drug selection. And this could affect the medicines that Medicaid patients have available.
What are the next steps?
Well, years ago, clinical practice guideline committees, including those from the World Health Organization and professional societies, were openly criticized for a lack of policies to manage conflicts of interest on their committees. And many of these organizations, including WHO, have responded by developing rigorous and more transparent policies for managing conflicts of interest. So clinical practice guideline committees make recommendations for treatment. So their decisions and processes should really align with committees that make decisions about drug reimbursement. Therefore, we think the Medicaid drug selection committees could be informed by the policies and processes of guideline review committees and use these in order to develop their own rigorous policies. We also think there needs to be coordination among the states so that the policies are uniform and transparent.
Thank you, Dr. Lisa Barrow from University of California, San Francisco, for talking with us about Medicaid drug selection committees and inadequate management of conflicts of interest. This is Jan Engmeyer with JAMA Internal Medicine. For more JAMA Network podcasts, visit us online at jama.com.